Hey there, I'm your host Alexis Newland and you're listening to The Brave Podcast. I am so happy you're tuning in today. Each week, a friend and I get together and talk about what makes them brave. So sit back, relax, grab your favorite cup of coffee or tea, and get ready for some engaging conversation. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of The Brave Podcast. Happy September, and I am so thankful that I got a week off last week. It is now September 9th at the time of this interview. I needed a little bit of break after my vacation. My vacation was great, it was refreshing, but I found myself pretty tired after it, and so I decided to take a little bit of a rest break from podcasting, so I am back this week. And so September is National Suicide Awareness Month, and so we're going to have an interview from my friend Pam, who wanted to stay anonymous, but also share her story with you guys in hopes to encourage you and to offer some support if you've ever dealt with the feelings of suicide and depression. At the end of the interview, since we left it out in the initial interview, we decided to add a clip of things you should say to someone if they're going through depression. So when the interview ends, be sure to listen to that piece as well. So without further ado, here is my interview with my friend Pam. Hey everyone, this is Alexis Newland. You're listening to The Brave Podcast, and my guest today is my friend Pam. And we work together, and right now we're actually recording in her office. Maybe I should not say that on the podcast. It's after work hours, so we're recording. And so, Pam, tell everybody why you are awesome.
Awesome. Well, I'd like to start by saying most of the time I don't think I'm awesome. But I have a funny story. So, back in college, I was working at Office Max. And my boyfriend, Kevin, was working at the same Office Max. And Kevin had met some of my professors at Fresno State. And one of our professors, Dr. Roberts, liked to shop at our store sometimes. And so Kevin had helped him one afternoon. And the next time I saw Kevin, Kevin said, "Oh, I saw Dr. Roberts at the store. He said some nice things about you." And I blurted out, which was kind of, I guess, my normal personality at the moment, "That's because I'm awesome." And Kevin kind of gets this smirky smile and he chuckles a little. And I'm like, "Uh-oh, what did I say?" And Kevin says, "Well, would you like to hear what he had to say about you first?" And I was like, "Yes." All right. So Dr. Robert says, "Oh, Pam, she's such a great student. I love having her. She's so modest and unassuming." And just kind of put me back in my place a little bit. So to this day, Kevin and I still, anytime someone says, "That's awesome," we just add, "and modest and unassuming." So that's my story.
I love it. All right. So Pam and I are going to talk today about depression and anxiety. And it's kind of a topic that many people are afraid to talk about. And so I love that Pam is so open and willing to share her story. And we were kind of saying earlier, she's the voice for people who aren't ready to share their story yet. And so, Pam, we'll have to go into your story and your history with...
I've kind of gotten there. It took me a lot of years. Yeah. I mean, this story takes place a good 18 to 20 years ago. I can't believe that. But, I know I'm finally got more ready to talk about it.
Yeah. Sure.
So a little bit about me. I was born in 1983. Can do the math if you want. It's okay. I was born and raised in Bakersfield. It's a couple hours south of Fresno, where we are now. Or Madera, where we are now. I went to a small private school for kindergarten through eighth grade. Was pretty high-achieving student. And then school and church activities and equestrian activities. I started riding horses when I was 9 years old. And started a band in fourth grade. So all those things kind of kept me busy.
Yeah.
And then after junior high, which wasn't that much fun, mind you.
It's awful. Junior high is horrible.
I wouldn't wish junior high on anybody.
It's the worst time.
So after junior high, I transitioned to Bakersfield High School, which was the largest high school in town. So went from this small private school to the biggest campus in Bakersfield. And I hit a pretty big culture shock. I felt like I did okay the first couple years.
Yeah.
But then kind of junior high hit, and junior year of high school hit. And my stress kind of just became difficult to manage. I began having some anxiety and panic attacks.
Yeah.
Related to school, but also with social situations. I would just kind of, my heart would race, and doorways became difficult to walk through. Hmm. And I was aware that what I was feeling wasn't normal stress. And so I started my search on Dr. Google and diagnosed myself with social anxiety. So I worked up the courage to talk to my parents about that stress and anxiety I was feeling.
How'd they take it?
They were receptive.
Yeah.
They were kind of difficult to talk to about some of those things.
Yeah.
They never really shared, like, what was going on with them growing up or with them medically, and yeah. So we just didn't talk about some things.
Yeah.
But I kind of proud of myself looking back that I was able to talk to them about it.
Yeah.
And they got me connected with my primary care physician and took some counseling. So anxiety for me is having this intense fear of people watching me and judging me. It's just more than just shyness or difficulty making friends. I wanted to be invisible.
Okay.
I was sensitive about my personal space and struggled more when people were behind me or looking over my shoulder, which made some classrooms more difficult than others, just the layout or
yeah.
How teachers would walk around and stuff. I had little interest in dating and other social events my peers were into. Never went to a formal or prom. To this day, just the thought of people watching me dance is just paralyzing.
Yeah.
We did not have dancing at our wedding.
You did not?
Nope.
Okay.
And I can't even think about it.
Yeah.
Now, no dancing.
No dancing. Good to know.
Okay. Most people have, like, a fight or flight response.
Yeah.
I think is how people refer it to. But mine feels like a freeze or flight.
Okay.
Just panic and just can't make any decisions. In moments of anxiety, my mind was so frazzled that I just couldn't make decisions. Just that panic freeze. So many thoughts would run through my head, analyzing every possible outcome of situation.
Yeah.
My heart would race. I'd get short of breath. Dizzy at times, and would be so tense that I would jump and startle at anything.
Would you be, like, alone or, like, in front of people when these things would happen?
Most of the time it happened in social situations. When I was alone, I was calm and okay. And sometimes it was, like, a small group that would trigger me, and sometimes, like, the big lecture halls with, you know, 100 yeah. students in them. And sometimes I could pull myself out of it, and sometimes just one little thing would set it off, and it would just spiral down.
Yeah.
And I'd wind up in, like, the nurse's office on campus, just need to sit in a dark corner and just calm down.
Yeah.
It's exhausting dealing with anxiety.
Yeah.
And just after those panic attacks, I'd be physically tired, but I would also analyze and replay them over in my head, like
yeah.
critiquing myself.
Yeah.
Like, I can't believe you let so-and-so see that happen to you. And I think I didn't have a lot of, like, resiliency as
yeah.
a child. It was hard for me to receive that criticism or any feedback, even positive feedback. I would put it off like, no, I don't deserve that.
Yeah.
You know, that wasn't perfect enough. You know, my parents and I had very high expectations for myself.
Yeah.
This such a pressure to be perfect that I think I ended up really having low self-esteem.
Huh.
Like, you know, when I couldn't hit that 100%, oh, I got a 95. The world is ending.
Yeah. Really beat yourself up for it.
Yeah. I was also really highly sensitive to the emotions of others and just caring and empathetic. But that's really exhausting, too, because you'll pick up on what they're feeling.
Yeah.
And it can change your mood.
Mm-hmm.
and
do you still have some of that, do you feel like, or
yeah,
can you tell? Yeah. I kind of have that too, of like, if I can feel how people are feeling in a room, mm-hmm. and I can pick up on it, and I'm like, oh. And sometimes if I'm comfortable with the person, I'll be like, if it's a really good friend, I'm like, what's wrong? Like, I would just blurt it out, and I'm like, yeah, I can feel your stuff. I'm like, tell me what's wrong. And they're like, oh, nothing. I'm like, no, you're lying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Help me let you work it through so that I'm not, you're not stressing me out, yeah, too. So by senior year, I had been through some counseling sessions, and that had helped, but I also began trials of medication.
Okay.
I think the first one I did was Paxil, which helped a little, but I really didn't like the side effects. Mainly it messed with my sleep.
Oh, yeah.
Just get these weird, wacky dreams. So we stopped that, and then the second one I tried was Zoloft, which helped a lot with my anxiety, and I felt good, but over time I began having these terrible headaches. And we did an MRI, and we did a few different neurologists, and finally, nothing came up. And finally, one of the neurologists says, what medications are you taking? Let's stop those. And within 2 weeks, the headaches were gone and never came back. So
wow.
We just attributed that to the Zoloft. And
yeah,
while it helped with the anxiety, I couldn't function with the headaches. So
yeah.
The next medication I tried was Xanax, which is kind of more of an as-needed basis. And I was able to use it, but not overuse it, and able to maintain my grades and all the extracurricular activities. And then I graduated in 2001 with honors and an academic scholarship to go to Fresno State.
Were you a Smitty? Like a Smitty, yep, kid? Yeah. Yeah.
I was also accepted onto the equestrian team.
Oh.
And so I think the first semester I was on academic scholarship, but after that, the athletic department took over my scholarship.
Okay.
Because the money, like, counted against them. Is the same, yeah, wherever the money came from. And so what they did is the athletics took over the scholarship, so freed it up so someone else could get the academic scholarship.
Okay, yeah.
So yes, you're in the presence of a scholar athlete. I don't know, fun little tidbit. So I moved up to Fresno to go to college, and then had a kind of this built-in support network with the equestrian team. My first roommates were also teammates, and we just had a lot more structure, I think, than non-athletic students, yeah, have. You know, classes and workouts and riding practice and barn chores, and that structure can really help. So I felt like I started the year well, but then began having some anxiety again. And then some negative thoughts about just general things. I know that I'm never good enough.
Yeah.
Kind of one. Is one of the main ones. But I knew to get connected with the health center, and I saw counselors there.
Was it helpful?
Yep.
Yeah.
And I made a much better connection with the counselors I had at Fresno State than the one that I saw in high school.
Okay.
And it was at Fresno State Health Center that the first person asked me, have you ever thought about hurting yourself? And my first thought, my initial gut reaction was like, no way, I wouldn't, that's, yeah, not me. I wouldn't consider that. But as I kind of dug a little deeper and processed that question more, I realized that I had to answer yes to that question.
Was it scary to answer yes?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I think it was even like two or three more sessions where I just went in and I just said yes. Yeah. And I just let them try to figure out what the question was to my answer. But we came to it.
Yeah.
And lots of tears were shed. But by answering yes to that question, I was in a much better place to deal with what I was truly feeling and start to address it.
Yeah.
So, yes, I had anxiety, but I also had depression. Depression for me was having these negative thoughts about myself and life in general. I'm my own worst critic, and I think many people are.
Yeah, we could be really hard on ourselves.
Yeah. I truly struggled to see the positive side of things, whether my accomplishments with the equestrian team or hard work with grades and school. Nothing was ever good enough for myself. I felt worthless, and I lost hope. I began to doubt the reason for my existence. I thought that some people in my life would be better off without me, and that other people wouldn't realize I was gone. I felt alone and struggled with guilt and shame. While these thoughts and feelings would come and go with good days and bad days, they never really went away. I had different thoughts about different ways to die.
Yeah.
And then would struggle with thoughts of, no, don't think like that. I didn't have access to weapons or drugs, but there were other ways to die. I had considered that possible outcomes, and I didn't want to traumatize my roommates. So I considered what might happen if the attempt was not successful, and if I impair myself without dying.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be a burden on other people. I had thought about what I would write in the suicide note, but never actually wrote it down.
Yeah.
Just would plan it out in my head. I would think about how I would want my things or money divided up and sent to charity. And that my sister might want my horse, Jeremy, but if she didn't want him, I could donate him to the equestrian team. It was such a head game for me. These negative thoughts just would swirl around, and I would try to hide them and try to control them.
That is so heavy.
But the more I struggled with these negative thoughts, the more I withdrew from friends.
Wow. That's a lot. And how old were you when you were going through all this?
Started college at ASU. I was 18, 19, 20. Wow. And in high school, I felt like it was more just stress and anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And then it wasn't really till college years, like, that I processed or that I felt more of that depression.
Yeah.
Just that hopeless, what's the point? Why even bother? Why live?
Yeah.
So I don't remember having those thoughts in high school so much. Whether I just was so stressed out to even deal with those thoughts or if it just hit me later.
Yeah.
I'm going to say this sentence two different ways.
Okay.
It's amazing what a smile can hide.
Hmm.
And it's scary what a smile can hide.
Yeah.
I felt like I had this deep, dark secret I had to keep. Like, no one would understand. Or worse, they might push me away for sharing my feelings. But really, I was the one pushing myself away.
Yeah.
Quite a few girls on the equestrian team, some were friends and some more like acquaintances. They had decided that my nickname should be Smiley, since I was always smiling out at the barn, whether I'm riding, doing chores, or attending team meetings. And I will admit that the barn was a happy place for me.
Yeah.
But it also meant that I felt like I was successfully hiding what I was feeling. Like, oh, they're clueless. Awesome.
Yeah.
Because I felt like I had to hide it. Like, I had to keep it secret. It's so important to be kind to everyone because you never know what someone is going through. You know, I was hiding behind that smile.
Yeah.
And it's hard because it's such a personal experience. But there's also the medical piece of it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to counseling. I'm taking medication for it. And I'm talking to my doctors about it. And so HIPAA gets involved.
Yeah.
And, you know, my privacy is protected under those things. And so we just, it's sort of personal and we just don't talk about it.
Yeah. And there's stigma, too.
Yeah.
Well, people see mental illness or any of these feelings.
Like, and there's, I think, is way more common than people realize.
Yeah.
Because so many people hide it. And others have better coping mechanisms than others. And but I think so many people, it's there. We just don't see it, don't recognize it. Again, I was saying I don't remember a lot from my counseling when I was in high school. I do remember it was in the evenings in a professional office, and it just kind of felt like this fancy therapist.
Yeah.
And it was through my parents' insurance, and I'm not sure how much was covered, but my mother made sure I knew it was expensive. And I remember it just feeling awkward, difficult to open up to the therapist while my mother was waiting outside. And she might not have even been there. She liked to go on walks and things. So she would drop me off. I'd go in the room, and I just, in my head, I imagine her sitting outside just trying to listen and, you know, be nosy. And but she might not have. Yeah. I don't know. We've never talked about that. But I was given some good strategies for breathing and relaxation, some meditation, and those helped. But again, we didn't get into those deep conversations back then. I was trying so hard. And again, I don't know if I just wasn't feeling that depression side or if I just wasn't ready to...
Go that deep. Yeah.
Ready to open them. And it was the counselors at Fresno State. I don't know if things were more laid back there or if it was just having that distance between my parents and I. And being an adult and not having to be like, is this therapist required to tell my parents? Yeah. So having that kind of difference and more independence, I think, helped me open up, too. And then after answering yes to that question, it just took this huge weight off my shoulders. Mm-hmm. And it made it okay to talk about it. It just gave me permission to say what I was feeling and experiencing. It's not like my counselor put that idea in my head. No, that idea was already there.
I think people are afraid when they know someone is going through that to ask that question. They're afraid they're going to give them the idea of, oh, maybe I should.
But yeah.
Sometimes the best thing you can do is to ask.
It just gives that person permission to talk about it.
Yeah.
Or to be like, yeah, okay, you get it. I'm not in this alone. You understand. So I had kind of been off meds for a couple years after the Zoloft in high school. You know, I was taking the Xanax intermittently, but at Fresno State, I did get connected back with the psychiatrist. And we started on Celexa, which worked really nice. It took a little while to find a good dose.
Yeah.
But that worked really nice. And that kind of coupled with the occasional Xanax or flare-up worked really well for me. But in counseling, again, I learned that kind of the importance of self-care and self-love.
Yeah.
And just work to build my confidence and my sense of worth. You know, what I have to offer is important. And then with those medications. Now, with the medication and the counseling were working, I felt good. And so good, in fact, that my immature self would think, oh, I'm fine now. I don't really like the, you said, stigma of taking this medication. So let's see how things go. And I would kind of self-taper my meds. Now, mind you, no one knew I was on medication except me and my doctor.
Yeah.
And so that stigma of not wanting to take medication was my own stigma, my own self-judgment. And so kind of, oh, bye, counselor. I'll see you next month. You know, I'm feeling good right now. So not just the meds, but my sessions, too. And I would do okay for a little while, but then things would kind of creep back up, and I would struggle again. But I knew to get connected back. So just kept seeking the right help. So I eventually learned that I needed the help from the medication at the time due to chemical imbalances in my brain. And that kind of brain chemistry brought on the anxiety and the depression.
Yeah.
And so then I was much more stable on the meds and things worked. And I was eventually able to fade the medication a few years after college under guided tapering from my physicians. And I've been off meds, I think, about 10, 11 years now. Sometimes I think, would a little bit of something help? But I've been managing fine. Yeah. So I want to take a minute and talk about stigma.
Yeah.
But I plugged my phone in over here, so hold on. Okay, so Merriam-Webster, I think, definition of stigma. Or maybe it's dictionary. Oh, no, it's Merriam-Webster. Should give credit where credit's due, right? A mark of disgrace associated with a particular circumstance, quality, or person. So it's this kind of this mark of shame or discredit. And then this other page I found talked about... there's the social stigma of the society pressures, public stigma.
Yeah.
And that's the reaction of the general population to the person who might have mental illness or some disability. But there's also this other stigma of the self-stigma, yeah. which is the prejudice that people turn against themselves. And so I... definitely had that second one.
Yeah.
It was me, but it was society's perception of mental illness that made me think that and turn that judgment on myself.
Yeah.
Again, I thought there was going to say more about that.
It's okay.
So stigma causes people to feel ashamed for something that's essentially out of their control, and it can prevent people from seeking the help that they need.
Yeah, that's the scary part.
And for people who already carry such a heavy burden, that additional stigma from the society or from themselves can just put that burden too much.
Yeah.
That you just, like, I can't bother with this right now. I'm helping to break open the stigma.
Yeah, you definitely are.
The best thing is just talk about it openly. So, finding hope. The biggest thing that helped me was looking for and finding hope.
Yeah.
Finding a reason to live. Initially, this was a daily struggle, a conscious effort. Like,
so
I had
to find
put in the work.
Yeah.
It might sound silly, but I often use my horse, Jeremy, as the reason to live. I knew that my sister or the equestrian team wouldn't love him the same as I did or wouldn't appreciate him.
Yeah.
He was my baby. Working with him and some of the other team horses also helped. There's something relaxing about raking and shoveling horse poop. and the touch, feel, and smell of horses were powerful, too.
Yeah.
The bond you make with your riding partner is strong. I was able to identify a few close friends and do weekly or daily check-ins with them. Still kind of high level, not a deep connection,
yeah.
just like... hey, how's it going? But it helped. I still wasn't willing to share that deep, dark secret that I felt I had. Keeping a full schedule also helped me, knowing that I couldn't lay around all day doing nothing. I have the workouts, classes, horse care.
Yeah.
Exercising and staying active outdoors helped. Go for hikes and ride my bike. And eventually, I also got that part-time job at Office Max. Told you that little story at the beginning.
Yeah, they're actually real life Jim and Pam.
Yeah.
I just realized that like last week.
Except it's Kevin and Pam, but yes. so I would work weekends and like a few evenings in the week, and that would kind of help fill my downtime on the weekends when I had less of that school structure to help.
Yeah.
Another mental exercise I remember doing was something my counselor called plus one. They would have me rate how I was feeling on a scale of 1 to 10.
Okay.
Just, how are you feeling right now? Pick a number. 1 being low and 10 being awesome, amazing. And then do something that day to make that number 1 higher.
Oh, I like that.
In a healthy way.
Yeah.
Good coping skills.
Yeah.
So if I rated my day a 3, what could I do for myself that day to turn that into a 4?
Okay.
It helped me realize that I didn't have to go... from that 3 to the 10. You know, I could...
just baby steps.
Baby steps.
Yeah.
You know, okay. And it's okay to move backwards. So I might go 3 to a 4. And tomorrow I'm a 3 again. That's okay.
Yeah.
Okay, today I'm a 2. That's okay. You know, I don't have to aim for that 10. One little step at a time. It helped keep things in better focus and perspective.
Yeah.
Just do that little bit, Pam. Over time, the anxiety and depression symptoms lessened. I didn't have to look as hard to find hope for the future. My symptoms are still with me to a much lesser degree, but I'm also able to catch the symptoms a lot faster and change course so I don't head down that dark path anymore. You kind of get these blinders on to use a horse term.
Yeah.
And you just start walking down that tunnel, and you don't realize how deep you get in there sometimes until you either kind of wake up or someone helps you. Like, hey, you're kind of
in a dark tunnel, dark place. Yeah.
Let's turn around, walk back toward the light. And you might have been walking in that tunnel for a while, and you're not going to just magically come out of it either. You've got to work to get back out.
Exactly.
So that same distance you walked in, you gotta do that same distance. The tunnel didn't suddenly get shorter now that you're working toward it. Now I can kind of counter a negative thought with a positive one and switch mental gears pretty quickly. But that took a while to learn how to do.
Yeah.
I think I kind of learned about being closed off from my parents. They didn't share a lot about what was going on with their lives when they grew up or with medical things, mm-hmm. even to this day. But also from kind of the stigma and shame I had received, some of it through my church, when I tried to open up early on.
Yeah. What are some of the things you heard? And so we know these are things not to say to a person going through depression.
I think a lot of times people think they'll just make a little comment and that'll help the person feel better.
Yeah.
But for me, a lot of the little comments that people made felt very judgmental.
Okay.
Or, like, I'm going through, this is a medical thing for me, too. It's not just a faith thing.
Yeah.
It can be both, but mm-hmm. when there is a medical piece to it, by only addressing the faith piece and ignoring the medical piece, you get an incomplete
picture
of it. I had told, or had people tell me, just pray over your anxiety, Pam. Just give it to God. Well, that wasn't working. Like, was so stressed. I needed to hold on to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't let it go.
Yeah.
I was trying. Some people would say God never gives us more than we can handle.
Which is not in the Bible, and I want people to stop saying that.
I know. but it makes it feel like, well, I'm not handling this, so what does that say?
About God, yeah. Say, hey, wait a minute, yeah.
I had one surprise, this sweet little old lady said, by allowing myself to be anxious about things, I was allowing the devil in. Don't let the devil in, Pam. And again, it felt like there's no advice there.
Like it was your fault.
Yeah. Like, because I'm choosing to be anxious, I'm choosing to let the devil in. And just that just felt like faith should be enough for you, Pam. Later, I never had people in my church, they didn't know I was on medication, but I would hear them comment and other things about, like, your body's a temple, you know, don't take medication, you know, you don't need it. And again, it discounts that medical piece to mm-hmm. it. You know, there's a known chemical imbalance here that...
And God made doctors and all these people with the knowledge to do these things. So
let's use
everything.
Medicine to help us too.
Yeah.
I opened up to my youth pastor about the anxiety. Just, hey, I need to talk to someone. Youth pastor seems like a cool guy to talk to about that, right? When you're in high school and things are weird. And while he never mentioned me by name, like the next few weeks we had lessons about anxiety and worry, and God will take our worries away if we only trust him enough. And again, he never mentioned me by name, but I felt singled out and I felt embarrassed. And other people in my church would come up to me and be like, I'm praying for you, Pam. And I'm like, well, how do you know about stuff? So I felt like
exposed
people
and vulnerable
were gossiping too.
Yeah.
Like, and it might have even just been in a prayer circle. You know, my youth pastor might have gone and said, like, hey, you know, Pam in high school group is just needing some extra supports right now. But it made me feel like when strangers are coming up, it's just that anxiety trigger of me feeling judged.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you know about what I'm going through?
Yeah, I don't know you. Yeah.
That I felt gossiped about, and it was just uncomfortable for me. So don't judge people. So yeah, I just kind of felt like, well, if I can't talk to my pastor about it, then I guess I just need to keep hiding what I'm feeling.
Yeah, that's hard. It's a hard place to be in.
But, you know, over time I've been able to open up and talk about my anxiety and depression. And I know I talked to Kevin, not right away in our relationship.
Yeah, I mean, that next. How did that go?
He might have been my fiance at the time, that I kind of would talk about the anxiety and depression piece.
Yeah.
And he knew I was on medication for it. But it took many more years before I shared with him that I had suicidal thoughts, that I wanted to die and would think about ways to die. And I never kind of proceeded to that next step of an attempt. So I never had an attempt, but I definitely had that ideation.
Yeah.
And every time I'd kind of get there, I'd be like, no, Pam, you're doing all these things to help. Like, you're going to counseling, you're taking the medication. One of my thoughts, plans, intents was to either jump off or drive off a cliff. Like, go up somewhere pretty, like up in Yosemite. And when I was feeling low sometimes and I needed to get gas, I was conscious enough to be like, let's only fill up half a tank so that we can't get to the pretty place.
Yeah.
And so I was able to realize that I was doing all these things to prevent it, you know, so that I wouldn't go through. And so I really must not want to die that much if I'm working on the prevention side of things, too. And so, like I said earlier, it was this head game with me. You know, the right shoulder talking to the left shoulder, the little angel and devil images of old. But both me, just versions of Pam, just talking back and forth about just all these reasons to live. And luckily those were strong enough to outweigh the why bother voices in my head. And then really only recently, maybe in the last year and a half, 2 years, I've been able to open up to colleagues and friends about the suicidal thoughts from my past.
What made you want to start sharing your story?
I went to a training. Valley Children's offered a training on a Saturday, probably about 3 years ago. It was a community forum on teen depression and suicide prevention. And Fresno County and Madera County were trying to join forces and create this suicide task force.
I wonder if it was because, you remember that show that came out, that 13 Reasons Why?
It might have been.
Yeah.
I feel like that came out a little bit after.
Yeah.
Kind of there was this big push. I think there had been a bunch of suicide high school students in Clovis around the time. And so it was just... I just went, just sort of a personal interest. I just told my husband, sorry, I'm going to go to work voluntarily for 4 hours on Saturday and not get paid, but that's all right. He's like, okay, no problem, go. And so I came and I learned so much about it. And there were a few other hospital staff who got up and shared stories. One was a personal story and one was a nurse who had lost her son to suicide, died by suicide. And just the overriding message of people feel alone and we don't talk about it. And so I took, kind of gathered a bunch of information I learned from that, and I put together this little presentation for our speech and audiology department. Our manager was like, anytime you go to like a conference and you learn something cool, you know, share it with your group. And so I thought, all right, this is cool. So I shared all the things I learned with those smaller teams. And I basically gave one sentence in there about, and I used to struggle with anxiety and depression and some thoughts in college. And then I moved on to the next little slide in my presentation. And then I took that same kind of message and I met with our rehab team.
Yeah, I remember that.
And that was the first one where I opened up a lot more. And it felt cool because all the different team members there just would ask a few questions. Like when I was talking about medication, the nurse practitioners were like, "Ooh, what meds were you on? And what were those side effects you didn't like?"
Yeah.
And the psychologist asked me a few questions. And I think our peer counselor chimed in a little. And someone asked, "What would your older, wiser self want to tell your younger self going through that?" And I thought, I wish it would be more open to talking about it and not hiding in shame. And then our peer counselor kind of elbows me and says, "You know, you could go back and talk about it, right?" And I was like, yeah, that's a big personal, open myself out there." And so I thought about it and I reached out to Dr. Roberts from earlier in our story.
Yeah.
Cause he taught at Fresno State, and I'm thinking I'll just go back and talk to the speech therapy department.
Yeah.
Grad school. So that's where I came out of. So let me go talk to them. Well, Dr. Roberts' wife teaches social worker classes and at the graduate level and has sections in her course on mental health. And so rather than connect me to the speech therapy department, he connected me to the social worker department.
Wow.
For people to become like mental health responders and counselors and things like that. And when I heard that he wanted me to talk to them, I was like, "Oh, okay." Yeah, what did I agree to? But okay, let's just get it open and talk about it. And so I've gone a couple semesters now and shared with kind of small 15 to 20 student classes, just kind of talking through what we went through today, just sharing my story and helping break open that stigma and make it okay to talk about. So, you know, I know here at our hospital, we have a nice employee assistance program. They have 24-hour on-call personnel. And I've used them a few times, whether it's just to talk to someone one time or get reconnected with counseling. I'm kind of short-term. So while I've been off meds for about 10 to 11, I don't remember now, a few years.
Yeah.
I do still periodically do the counseling and just kind of reset my coping skills and reinforce that, I got this. Things are okay.
Yeah.
I'm kind of proud of myself for overcoming my struggles. I know that these feelings are always a part of me, and I'm learning to embrace my past. I'm proud to say I'm fully functioning, contributing member of society. I still have two horses, Lily and Tess, though my Jeremy passed away a few years ago. He was 31.
That's a long time.
Good, long life.
Jim is a baby?
No, he was 14 when I got him.
Okay.
Like a kid. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Have a wonderful husband, Kevin. We just celebrated our 14-year anniversary.
Hey, congratulations.
He's very supportive, and he's very in tune with what I'm feeling. And some days he'll catch me and be like, "You're having an off time. What do you need?" And I'll stop and go, "You're right. I didn't even realize, slow down to realize that I was dealing with something." So, and he's just very supportive, and we just have kind of a fun sense of humor at home.
He's
too.
A really cool guy. I like you guys as a couple a lot.
Play games in 14 years. That's like impressive, right?
Yeah.
We have an amazing son, Isaac. He's 8 years old, almost nine. And I love what I do here at Valley Children's Hospital. I'm a pediatric speech language pathologist and been here almost 13 years.
Wow.
My manager and the team I have are so supportive, and there is so much more to life after making it through that dark tunnel that is depression and suicidal ideation.
Definitely.
You just have to choose hope, and it's, again, sometimes it's that daily choice, but you can do it.
Okay. I have a final question for you.
Sure.
Would you call yourself brave?
Again, like I said at the beginning, most days I don't consider myself awesome, and I'll just say most days I don't consider myself brave, but I know that most people aren't ready to talk about such a big personal thing like this.
Yeah.
To strangers. So, yeah, I guess you could call me brave. I will let you call me brave.
All right.
But I just want to provide that little beacon of hope to others and hope my story touches someone.
Yeah, I think it definitely will. I think it's good to hear that someone else has been through it and gotten on to the other side.
Yeah.
And doing okay and doing well, and that it's okay if you're struggling with these things. Because it's sad to say, it's normal.
Yeah. Like, it is normal. And it's okay to not be okay.
Yeah.
Just do something about it.
Exactly.
You know, seek help, counseling, and it's okay to be on medication. You know, sometimes it's a long-term thing and sometimes it's a short-term thing.
Yeah.
It's okay to get that help in any format you need.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much, Pam.
You're welcome.
Alright, so we were talking about things that you shouldn't say to someone who's going through depression and anxiety, so now we're going to talk about things that you should say.
Alright, so some things I kind of maybe wish people had said, or things that I think would have helped me, is really just acknowledge that it kind of sucks. You know, say something like, I'm sorry you're going through a rough time, or just, you know, reach out, I'm here for you if you need to talk. I'm always happy to listen. Things like, I care about you, don't give up. It's okay to struggle with things, but make sure you take care of yourself.
Okay.
You're important to me, or, you know, how you're feeling is important. So, you know, take this seriously. And I'm thinking of you. And that to me was different. Like, when people would say, I'm praying for you, it felt like this extra layer of judgment.
Okay.
But just, I'm thinking about you, and I mean, I'm praying for you is okay, too.
But, yeah. you know, but for you, you would have preferred...
I'm thinking about you. A little bit longer one, but, you know, things may be difficult now, and it might be hard to see, but things will can and will get better.
Okay.
And even some verses or some scriptures and things are more appropriate than others.
Yeah.
You know, God will never give up on you. You know, don't give up on yourself. Never will God leave you. Never will he forsake you.
Yeah.
Things like that, where it's more just connecting with the, yes, this is something you're going through, but you're not alone in this. Be strong and courageous. And just... don't give up, and, you know, I'm here, and reach out and just be that listening ear. Yeah. Listening can provide so much hope to people.
I think people kind of struggle, like, think they have to come up with something to say, and then sometimes it's the best thing is just someone to be a listening ear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be awkward when someone says, yeah, I'm struggling with anxiety, I'm struggling with depression, or if they feel really comfortable with you, yeah, I think about killing myself. As the receiving end of that is like, whoa, hold on a minute.
Yeah.
But just acknowledging it. Yeah, that sucks. I'm sorry you're going through that.
Yeah.
I'm here to listen. I care about you.
All right. Those are the helpful things. Those are things to say.
Yeah.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of The Brave Podcast. So happy to have you guys tune in today. I know this topic was a difficult topic, but I just want our listeners to know, if you've ever dealt with feelings of suicide and depression, that you are never alone, and that there are people who are out there who have experienced depression, thoughts of suicide, and to know that you are loved and that there is help for you. And so in the show notes, I'm going to put a lot of information about numbers you can contact if you ever feel that way. Also reach out to a friend, a pastor, and if you have a friend that you suspect of having the thoughts of suicide or depression, you asking them if they are having suicidal thoughts will not make them want to do it. In fact, they may be relieved that you asked. So just know that you are loved. Never be afraid to ask if you suspect anything, and never be afraid to ask for help. All right, guys, thanks so much for listening in this week, and we'll see you next time. Bye.